Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. It's November 6th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at InvestableWealth.com. We have a special episode today. I'm recording on location at the homestead of Jack Spierko. Now, if you're familiar with that name, Jack needs no introduction, but if you're not familiar with Jack Spierko, and if you have an interest in permaculture or preparedness or modern-day survival skills, then you're going to want to check out the SurvivalPodcast.com. I first met Jack, maybe 3 years ago or so. He really is responsible for my break and getting into podcasting. He had me on his show a couple years ago, and then as a result of that and other interactions I've had with him, he's been a real inspiration for having me launch my own podcast, and he's been very good and gracious to me. Yeah, so check out his podcast if you haven't heard it before. The reason I'm down here is that Jack is having a workshop about growing, grafting, and propagating plants. Now, there's always an eclectic crowd at these type of gatherings, and there's a lot of diverse interests because people are obviously concerned with a variety of different topics, everything from, let's say, modern-day survivalism, food security, good, healthy, nutritious eating, growing their own food, starting their own businesses, breaking away and becoming independent from corporate life. So whenever Jack has these kind of events, he also includes a variety of other instructors, and I've been invited down this week to talk about building wealth and investing from a prepper permaculture standpoint. And I'm also taking part in the workshop to learn more about propagating plants. I'm really interested in grafting. As a little kid, I remember watching my grandfather, who was a fantastic farmer, gardener, and homesteader. And I was always amazed at the way he could graft plants. He grafted a lot of fruit trees. But my youth was wasted on me, and I didn't really take the time to ask him questions or learn exactly what he did. I remember watching him do it, but I never learned how he did it or the reason that he did certain things. So that's why I was excited to come down here. Not only to teach a class on building wealth, I always enjoy doing those, but I really wanted to learn more about grafting and propagating fruit trees because it takes me a little bit back to my heritage. Now, I am recording outside live on Jack's property, and that's going to be the emphasis of today's podcast. I want to focus on getting you to think about being more productive, particularly around your home. And I'm going to talk about homesteading in particular. Remember, the name of this podcast is Wealthsteading, and that name did derive from the concept of homesteading, where we're sturdy and steadfast and strong and able to be independent and stand on our own. And even if you're not interested or don't think you're going to be interested in homesteading, you're still going to want to listen to this episode because like everything we do in the Wealthsteading podcast, we tie it back to one of the 10 fundamental wealth-building principles. And I'm going to relate the concept of what Jack is doing on his homestead and tie that back to how I make investment decisions in the stock market. Now, the reason I think this is such an important topic is that most of us, the largest purchase or the largest investment we'll ever make is in our home. And obviously, if you can take care of big expenses like your home and you do that right, then you're 80% of the way there of building your wealth. And consequently, though, if you make a mistake there, you're going to dig yourself a big hole. You're maybe going to be house poor, or you're going to buy a house where you're underwater, or you buy a house in a bad neighborhood where the property values are declining rather than improving. And as a result of that, you'll lose a major part, if not all, of your net worth. I've seen it happen time and time again. And while I'm not going to get into property values and things like that today or what to look for in a neighborhood, I do want to focus on the production side of either your home or your homestead. I realize that some of you really don't care about homesteading, or at this point may not think you care about it, or you're in a situation in your life where you can't act on it. So before I get into the specifics of the food production and that aspect of homesteading that Jack is doing here, I do want to draw some parallels that you can relate in your own personal life. You see, because besides homesteading this property, another way he's made his life more enjoyable and he's made his home more functional is that his business is based out of his home. So he doesn't have to worry about commuting. He doesn't waste time driving in traffic. So what's he need to work from home? Well, he needs good internet access. He needs a place to have his office. He needs to be able to have some storage facilities. He needs to be able to have a large classroom and property where students can gather to come to workshops and events like I'm at today. But for the most part, he's a podcaster. So it's his quiet office space and a fast, reliable internet connection that's most important. I likewise have my business co-located in my home. To me, that's critical for my independence and my freedom. Not worrying about having to be somewhere in a deadline or fighting rush hour traffic or be at a specific place at a specific time for a meeting. It's a phenomenal lifestyle. If you can find a way to work from home, either full-time or part-time, whether it's telecommuting or working for yourself, or even if it's just every other Friday, your employer will let you stay at home and do your work, try and make that happen. You'll not only be more productive, you'll be much, much more happy. So if you take nothing else from this podcast, at least consider that. Find a way where you can spend more hours working from home and not having to deal with commuting and traveling. And let me give you an example of what I'm seeing as I'm down here on Jack's property. And again, this just takes me back to my roots. Being out here on his homestead reminds me so much of the land that my grandfather used to garden and tend to. And I can see those things, the things that worked for my grandfather 30 years ago and worked throughout his life. He lived to be 96, so he had a good, healthy, long, productive life. But those same historical things that go back hundreds or thousands of years, that's what gives us a fulfilling and healthy life. Now, I don't expect you to grow all your own food, but I know from watching what my grandfather did, he grew a substantial amount of what he ate. And the hard work that he put into growing that food likewise gave him a very healthy body. And that's probably contributes to why he lived to be almost 100 years old and an incredibly healthy man. I think the only time in his life he was ever in a hospital was that last week of his life when he passed away. Now, let me describe Jack's property to you. And oh, by the way, you'll probably hear background noises. I'm not too far off of a road, so you might hear cars going by. I'm sure an airplane or two will go overhead. There are a lot of small farm-type animals. There's chickens and ducks, and I know I've heard some roosters crowing here, so you might hear some of that noise. I'm standing not too far away from the beehive, so there's a lot going on out here. Now, this property is about 3 acres. And it's in what you would consider would be, you know, a somewhat rural area. It's definitely not suburbs. It's on the outside of the suburbs. But I think it's only about, you know, 30 minutes from a major city, you know, a major, very large city. So it's not that far. If you had to travel for your employment or if you had to, be in a large city where they had specialized services, maybe a particular type of hospital or something like that. So he's still very close to, you know, if you want to call it civilization. He's within, you know, 30, 45 minutes of a major international airport. And you really can't ask for anything better than that as far as when you might want to travel for business or for pleasure. And yet he has this country-type setting of 3 acres of property, and all of his neighbors around him, I'm sure they're similar tracts of land, 3, 5, maybe 10 acres. And this isn't a gentleman's horse farm property. You know, I see a lot of people that have a horse farm or a horse ranch, and that's not what I'm talking about when I talk about a homestead. When I talk about a homestead, I mean a piece of real estate that is productive. It's producing something for you. If you own a horse farm or horse ranch, the people that I know that have done that, unless they're breeders or some, you know, specific industry ties to it, they're not making money off that property. It's costing them money. It costs a lot of money to raise and maintain and stable a horse. And although I'm sure there's a great deal of pleasure in riding them, that's still a very, very expensive proposition. But that's not what Jack's doing here. He's creating a very productive homestead. As I mentioned, all the animals, ducks, geese, chickens, honeybees. And he's planting as well. He has raised beds for vegetables. He's put in numerous productive type trees trying to develop a food forest. I'm talking fruit trees, nut trees. And he's done this taking a very holistic permaculture type design standpoint where he's working with the land and he's working with nature. He's using the terrain and the features of the property, the existing native trees that are already on the property, and then the buildings, the home, the outbuildings, the things that are, you know, the structures that are on the land where they would cast shadows or, you know, create microclimates. He's broken his property up into zones and sectors, and then he analyzes those and he observes. He watches for patterns. He watches for what type of sun and lighting patterns that these different areas of his yard will receive over the year. You know, what's going to happen in the winter? What's going to happen in the summer? Where are the coldest spots going to be in January or February? You know, where the hardiest plants need to be. And then the corollary to that, where is the most brutal, barren, dry, sun-bleached area is going to be in July and August? Where does he need supplemental irrigation? What type of plants can grow in guilds or can complement each other? So he studies the property. He looks at nature. He looks at all the form of energy coming into the property through sun and wind and things like that. He looks for frost pockets that may, you know, happen in the wintertime. He's looking for areas of natural shade or shelter. And then he goes in and he tries to supplement that. You know, perhaps he may put in a swale to conserve water, to collect water, to move it more slowly across his property. Other areas he may encourage water to run off and accumulate it into like a pond or some type of a tank where he can recirculate and use that water to irrigate the vegetation or to give a place for the ducks or the chickens to drink out of. He may put in other earthworks, building up berms, again, to create some types of microclimates, maybe to direct water, to direct the wind, to shield against sunlight. And then once he makes those improvements on the land, and again, maybe puts in some irrigation where it needs it, he'll plant, and he'll plant a variety of native species as well as other crop and fruit-producing type vegetation to see how it will grow. And he doesn't do this willy-nilly. For example, he'll study hardy breeds of apple trees or fig trees or pecans. He knows what his climate's like. He obviously has the internet to research things and will look for hardy breeds that may have been developed in the Middle East or different climates. I know as I've walked through his property, I've seen a number of fruit trees, and I don't remember what type they were, but there were a number of them that came from Israel. So they could take heat in the summer, but also were hardy enough to take the frost in the winter. But studying it isn't simply enough. Remember, he's analyzed his property. He knows his zones and his sectors. He knows what these microclimates are like. And he's done his homework. He studies these plant breeds. But he doesn't know if they're really going to work out until he puts them in the ground. So then he plants them. And he nurtures them. He obviously prepares the ground, adds any nutrients it may need, provides them with supplemental irrigation to get them started. His end goal is not to have to put inputs into the property once it's up and established. You know, after 2 or 3 or maybe 4 years, he wants these perennials to be regenerative, to take care of themselves, where he doesn't have to put inputs. He doesn't want to have to add extra water or give them fertilizers or anything like that. He doesn't want to have to supplement them. He wants to plant things that are going to be able to be hardy and be able to adapt to these microclimates on his property so that they can grow and be a permanent self-sustaining ecosystem. But he realizes he does have to nurture them along the way until they get established. And although he's studied his property and he's tried to manipulate the land and he's educated himself in these different breeds of vegetation and he plants them and he tries to give them the initial love and attention that they need to get established, sometimes things just don't work out. Some trees or plants, they die. Others may get disease. They may not be able to deal with either the climate or perhaps the pests or predators. And when that happens, he doesn't try and baby those trees or those plants. Now, as I mentioned, he doesn't neglect them, not initially. He is caring for them. He knows that they're young, fragile plants when they're first established. But beyond giving them the basics, after they've had a year or a season or two to grow, if they don't produce, if they die, he doesn't worry about it. He cuts his losses. He chops them and drops them. For example, let's say that on his property he plants 15 apple trees that are all the same variety, and 3 of them die and 7 of them thrive. Well, then he goes back and he studies those particular microclimates. What was different in the areas where the 3 apple trees died versus where the 7 thrived? He learns from that. He takes the feedback. And then maybe next time he knows that apple trees are not going to grow in those other areas. Maybe that's where a fig tree needs to go, or maybe that's where a pecan goes. Or perhaps it's too shady and that's where a mulberry bush needs to go. And that's the same way with his animals. He breeds different types of ducks and geese and chickens. He's finding which ones will thrive in his climate, which ones are the easiest to take care of, which ones require the least maintenance, you know, which chickens lay the best eggs, which broilers are the most tasty. And he keeps track of that. And again, if he loses one or something doesn't work out with a particular breed, he tries a different one. Nowhere on his property does he fight nature. If a particular type of animal or a particular type of breed of animal doesn't work, he doesn't fight it. If a particular fruit or nut tree or a vegetable or a shrub, if it doesn't grow properly, he doesn't fight it. He's working with nature, not against nature. And as a result of his diligence and hard work, he's developing 3 acres of property which are extremely productive in terms of food production. He has his own eggs. He has his own meat birds. He has fresh, delicious vegetables. He's growing a food forest. In the world we live in, with all the toxic pesticides and chemicals, the crony capitalism we have in our agricultural system, just the really poor nutritional quality of the food we eat, he's providing himself and his family with something that's not only healthy, but it's delicious and enjoyable. That's homesteading. That's productivity. Now let me switch gears a little bit and relate this back to investing, because I believe that the rules of investing, the rules of wealth steading, are the same whether you're talking about developing a food forest on 3 acres of property or if you're investing in the stock market. You notice that I mentioned with Jack that he was not fighting nature, he was working with nature. Oh, he will put in some earthworks, he will add some supplemental irrigation, he'll do those things, you have to do your part. And he'll study and learn not only his own property, but he'll study the vast variety of plants and animals and see what's best suited, and then he'll make informed decisions. But he's not going to fight nature. He's going to put things in, and if they grow, he'll take care of them. If they don't, he'll move on to something else. Well, that's where I want to relate it back to the stock market, because we do those exact same steps when we invest in the stock market. We know how much resources we have to allocate from our portfolio to a particular type of investment. We study the different investment vehicles, the different asset classes. We study trends. We look for hints of which way the economy may go. We study the fundamentals of individual stocks. We do everything we can to inform ourselves to make the best investment decisions. We not only look at the trends and the fundamentals, we also look at the technicals. And then we determine the exact entry point to buy into a stock or an index fund. But then, at that point, when we've done all we can do, we just have to sit back and watch and observe. We can't be emotionally tied to a decision that we made beforehand, maybe when we had improper information or inadequate information, or perhaps maybe we had perfect information, we thought we made a good decision, and we just had bad luck. Whatever it is, if we buy a stock and for whatever reason it isn't working out, our plan's falling apart, just as my friend Jack lets nature tell him about the microclimate, and his property and what's best suited to grow there by actually putting out the animals, putting out the plants, and then observing how well they thrive and which ones don't thrive. That's the same thing we want to do with stocks. We make informed decisions, we take the action, but if the plan's not working, if the stock is failing, we don't stubbornly hold on. We chop and drop. We cut our losses, we take that feedback, and we try and learn something so we improve our trading strategy next time. But if it was a good decision, if the stock prospers, we look for the most optimum time when we feel that we should take profits, and we take our profits, and we move on. Again, we're not emotionally attached. We don't hold on to a particular stock, like say Apple, because we just love the product and we love the company, or you love the CEO, or you think they're going to do really well in the future. You look at your technicals and your fundamentals and your trends, and then you look at the actual performance of that stock. And if any of those get out of kilter, particularly the price action fundamentals of the technical charting aspect of it, if that gets out of kilter, that's your first early warning sign. You chop and drop, you sell that stock and you move on. You take your profit or you take your loss, you learn from it, and you move on. And you can't do that once or twice or three times. You have to do it over and over and over again for months and years and decades. And that's the way you build and grow and maintain your wealth in the stock market. You can't just sit it and forget it. It takes work, it takes effort, it takes study. Now my friend Jack, he can build a permanent food forest that's self-sustainable because that's the way nature is. But the stock market isn't sustainable in and of itself. The stock market isn't a natural organism that can grow and rejuvenate. The stock market is simply an interaction of millions and millions and billions of human beings. Companies are constantly emerging or going bankrupt or faltering or reinventing themselves. Individual countries and economies are constantly adapting and changing because of politics or natural events, disasters, wars, or political interference. There's constant change. I don't believe that you can ever just set and forget the stock market, that there's such a thing as a permanent portfolio. Every year, every decade, every generation, there's new players, there's new challenges. And although history keeps repeating and rhyming itself, you never know exactly what period you're in. There are periods of inflation, there are periods of deflation. There are periods of secular growth, there are periods of depression. You have to try and determine what you're in and adjust your portfolio and your investment strategy accordingly. So what I've tried to do in this podcast is encourage you to take a look at homesteading, to making the property you live in, whether it's a home, an apartment, a condo, whatever it is, wherever you're living, try and make it a little more productive, a little more sustainable, where you're putting less input costs in and getting more out. Now, I'm not saying that you have to go all out on homesteading and be a little home on the prairie, but if you have a yard, think about growing some vegetables. If you have a patio, think about growing some herbs. Look at your home. Look at the ways you can not only reduce the costs, but also improve the quality of life. Maybe it means moving to a different location. Maybe it means moving closer to work so you have less of a commute. Maybe it means figuring out how to get a job so that you can telecommute and work from home or to start your own company so you can office out of your house. Start where you're at. Look at ways you can make little incremental improvements today. Try and make your home situation better going into 2015. And remember, whenever you make these small incremental improvements, you're already on the right path. You're already on track. You're becoming successful and building your wealth the day you decide to make those little changes. You don't have to wait 20 years to reap the rewards of the benefits. You'll be getting them now. Now for our next episode, I'm going to try and record the presentation that I give on building wealth in terms of being a prepper and someone concerned with permaculture design principles. And barring any type of technical difficulties, I will bring that to you in the next episode. In either case, though, I'll make sure we finish out the week with a market review where we not only discuss what's happening in the general market, but I'll also give you an update on how my specific investment sectors are performing. Thanks again for listening. If you haven't subscribed, please go out and do so in iTunes or give us a rating. If you haven't listened to the first 10 episodes, go back and give those a try. That's where we lay out the 10 fundamental wealth building principles. And as always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.